Hey guys, Mark from the GAK.co.uk Guitar Shop podcast here. Just dropped in at the beginning of the podcast to remind you all that if you want the inside scoop on any news or any deals that we've got going on at the shop, do follow us on Twitter at GAK_co_UK. You can also follow the podcast guys individually. You can follow me at Mark_random. You can follow Matt at Matt_nightsy. You can follow Jay at JAYBN1. And you can follow Joe at Joseph_900. Hello and welcome to the GAK.co.uk Guitar Shop podcast. I'm your host Mark Packham, who is with me this evening.
Hello, my name's Jay. I'm the assistant manager here in the guitar store.
Hello, my name is Matt and I'm the manager.
Brought to you through Vocoder this week, apparently.
Miku software.
Miku, yeah, we've just plugged. We've got to run the podcast for a Miku and see what happens. That'd be amazing.
Except Joe. Can we do all of the mics except Joe's?
Well, we'll just do this episode.
Okay.
We'll put it
through.
That's
actually a thought, because obviously the guitar triggers the Vocaloid software and at different pitches.
What if you put vocals for it?
Yeah.
I guess you can't. It's just triggering a sample, isn't it?
Yeah, but you can. What if you just somehow got the text? If we wrote out the podcast and then text it to
We'll get Miku to do the intro to the podcast. When the pedals come in, how about that?
I'll play. Yeah, that's cool.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm in.
How is everyone?
Yeah, good.
We've hit an amazing tangent straight away.
Yeah,
I like it. I like it. What's been going on?
I ran a half marathon in guitar related news.
Yeah, very impressed.
Yeah. I thought I had a lot of time to think about guitars. That's why I do it.
I just don't get it. What do you get out of it?
Think about pedal boards.
his shirts don't like bulge open like your ones do. Just
yeah, it's because I've got a little triangle on.
It's because all that gym working out I've been doing.
All that gin he's been like lifting from the table up to the mouth and then down
say,
again.
Who's gym?
But very good.
Been working gym.
Yeah, I'd like to think it's my rippling biceps and pecs that are causing the shirt to bulge
open. I'm glad that's what you like.
Also, it's quite a small shirt.
It's a small shirt.
Well, thanks for that. Thanks. I'll see you later.
Yeah, thanks.
I don't need this abuse on the internet.
Yeah, no, it was. You did a good run. I gave you some money.
You did?
I didn't. Sorry.
Oh, you're out of order.
Yeah, I completely forgot.
And then in other news, since we're not doing staff picks anymore, so I was just leaning over to look at the thing. Deco.
That's it. Deco. So it is a cross between the Miku and the Deco. Yeah. It's tape saturated Vocaloid anime pedal. We've hit the jackpot.
Yeah.
Profit.
So they came in today. We sold two straight away. And I plugged it in, and it is one of the best things I've ever heard.
So we should clear. We're talking about the Strymon Deco.
The Strymon Deco.
Tape saturation plus
I would class
warble.
It,
it's a multi-effects.
I would class it as a reel-to-reel tape simulator.
Okay.
Because effectively, that's what it is.
But it's not just doing tape delay.
No, so it's emulating all of the effects, I suppose, you would get from reel-to-reel tape.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you had two tracks, stereo track, and you slowed one down by a certain amount, you get chorus, then you start to get flanger, and then obviously you start to get delay. And you're thinking about very small milliseconds here. You're talking about, like, chorus, you're talking about 1 to 10 milliseconds delay between, effectively, two tracks. So I think what it's doing is it's, when you turn on the double tracking side, it's actually a super, super short delay.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Okay. And then the other side of it is like a tape delay.
Yeah,
side.
So the big control you've got is lag, which basically lags the delayed signal from your original signal.
Moving the head, record head.
Yeah, basically. So you're moving the second reel further away.
Yeah.
Which is cool. And then you've got warble, which is adds on modulation. And actually, if you hold, there's so many extra hidden features in this. It's bonkers. If you hold down the double tracking button, it gives you automatic through flanging. You know, like that, like classic tape flange you hear on old 70s records, it goes like and everything crosses over nothing and then comes back the other side.
Yeah.
You can do that automatically by holding down the double track button.
Oh,
so if you're playing
neat.
Guitar through, you've got this automatic wicked through what they call through zero flanging, where the tracks cross over into zero, so you get complete cancellation and then come back through the other side.
That's really weird.
Yeah,
weird.
I'm into
and
it.
And then the other side, you've got the tape saturation, so natural tape overdrive. It sounds, honestly, you don't turn the saturation all the way up, you leave it about halfway, crank up the volume, best clean boost. Ever.
Well, we'll get to that. We've got a question about that in a bit.
But
we'll
I would just have one. And honestly, the cool thing is, run it into 2 amps, you can widen the stereo panning.
Okay,
so
really?
You can simulate how wide you want the stereo effect to be between two amplifiers.
As if it was running through a desk and then
you're like
you're putting the pan pots left and right or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, it's crazy. So like with lag time in terms of the delay, you can... It's still delayed at the same delay rate, but you're telling it to go through the second amp at a slightly different.
Yeah.
Almost like, so it gives this, like when you've got the chorus kind of really subtle tape delays on it, and it sounds massive. Absolutely massive. Honestly, best recording tool as well, I reckon.
I really want to get one. That was the other news this week. I bought your Hughes and Kettner TubeMaster 5.
Yeah, because I bought a Fender Supersonic 22 combo, and I couldn't really afford it, so something had to give, and Mark very generously offered to take my TubeMaster 5 from my hands at a discounted rate.
It's the first time since 2007 that I've owned an amp, pretty much.
Guitar amp?
Yeah, almost a bass amp, really. I've had that head the whole time,
but I haven't
had a cab since about 2008.
Really?
Yeah.
And that lived in my house for most of the time.
Yeah. So it's cool. I've been actually playing some guitar plugged in.
Yeah.
It's awesome, but I kind of want to get a deco, which is why I bring it up. It's because I like that ME80, but I feel the deco might do everything that I do with the ME80. I'll still keep the ME80 because it's got some great effects. I think maybe the deco.
I don't think there's anything on the market that does what the deco does.
What are we thinking about, signal path for the deco?
At the end,
at
they
the
recommend.
End, yeah,
they recommend at the end.
In an effects loop, or
no? I would just say I'd say straight into the front end.
Yeah.
What if you're running things in the effects loop?
I suppose you could put it in the effects loop. Because it is technically modulation, but the problem is the saturation. And when you saturate that signal path between preamp and power amp...
Is the idea of it not that it's like a tape recorder, so that would effectively be the last thing in the chain, you know, past
anyway,
the EQ?
Yeah.
Anyway, it'd be interesting to see...
We should do it.
Yeah, maybe we should try it. Have you ever tried, like... I mean, I'm assuming you put a distortion pedal through...
I never have.
It sounds awful.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, because I've got a pedal board that's got a couple of, you know, delays and stuff on it that I was just running through an effects loop, but it's got some other effects on it, which I left off. But I thought, you know what, because I'd never tried it either, because you always just hear, don't do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it'd been so long since I think I probably had tried it. And then I turned it on and was like, wow, you really don't want to do that.
No, I've never tried it. We should do it and report back, definitely. Any other news this week? Any other business? What else has come in?
I'm moving house. Oh, what else has come in? Sorry.
You're going out.
I'm going out. I'm moving house tomorrow, and I've sort of had to consolidate all my stuff into boxes.
Right.
And for the first time in ages, and I know I say this all the time, but I found my Fender Phaser.
Yeah.
And I plugged it in just really quickly, and it sounds so good.
It's your favourite pedal.
I love it. It sounds so good. Just that and the RE20. And you got me sorted. Like, it's so good.
Phasey delay wonderland.
Yeah. No, I've put all my stuff into boxes, and it's like, oh man, I've got way more. I always thought I was like
traveling.
Nah, I only need one guitar and I need one amp and like pedals. Nah. And now packing up my stuff, I'm like, oh, I've got
a lot.
So much stuff. But there we go.
It's the downside of being a guitar nerd, I guess. Collect a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
There was some news this week. John Mayer's left Fender, apparently.
Oh, yeah, I heard that yesterday.
Really?
The guys at Gibson. Well, the guy from Gibson was like, what did Fender do? And John Mayer tweeted, I'll always love Fender guitars, but, you know, it's time to move on or something. And then put...
He loves Strats or something.
Yeah. And then another tweet was like, anyone who wants a John Mayer Strat, I'll get one now because I'm no longer a Fender endorsee.
But there's a twist on this today. one of the American magazines is reporting that Joe Bonamassa is exclusively using Fender amps and Fender guitars on his next tour.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I saw that this morning.
Wow.
Joe Bonamassa has gone. It's time for a change. I just love the Strats, so I'm going out exclusively with all Fender gear, guitars and amps on my next tour. Because he's got a new album coming out.
Is it a country album?
It's just an album. Is it another, it's just called. I think it's called. It's called something blue. It's I think it's called the Blue Room.
I love Fender guitars.
Fender
Blues Junior.
Blues the Junior.
Album. Blues Junior.
Everything recorded on the Blues
what
Junior.
What would you do if that was his live rig was stereo Blues Juniors and a Baja telly? It was like I listened to this podcast and I just had to buy a Baja.
Imagine that if he's like interviewing the mag, he's like, "There's this podcast that I listen to and." Really convinced me that I need to buy Baja telly and a couple Blues Juniors.
He fell asleep with it on in headphones and woke up. Going.
And you're saying we're like Darren Brown of guitars, basically.
Yeah.
It's like that episode in Friends.
Yeah, you're a strong, confident woman that night.
As we're talking about this, I am just casting my mind back to a thing I read on the Guitar Nerds Facebook forum, where people were like, right, they talk so much about Blues Juniors and Baja Tellys, maybe we should start a drinking game for whenever the boys mention Blues Juniors or Baja Tellys. Well, and the amount of times that we've just...
When we mention Blues Juniors and Baja Tellys?
Yeah, if ever we mention a Blues Junior or Baja Telly, you need to take a drink.
What guitars?
A Baja Telly.
Okay, and what, was there an amp as well?
Yeah, it was a Blues Junior.
But what guitar?
A Baja Telly.
Okay, sweet. But what amp?
A Hot Rod Deluxe. Okay. Oh, nearly got it. I'm going to take a drink. Basically, everyone who listens to this podcast
is now
I hope they're not driving to work. Because we take no responsibility.
But if Joe Bonamassa is using Fender amps, does that mean when someone writes in and goes, yeah, I want that Joe Bonamassa tone, you go, well, Baja Telly and a Blues Junior.
Yeah. No, because I think it'll be Strats.
Yeah, I'm sure it will.
But like, that's Strat.
I'm super interested to find out what's going on, you know, how he goes with this, because
is that
you
John Mayer's going to be using Les Pauls?
I mean, you know, think how much money there's going to be if they bring out a Joe Bonamassa Strat.
Yeah.
I mean, so the thing is, like, buy that guitar.
That's, you know, when people come in here and they say, you know, how do you get that Joe Bonamassa sound? It's like, well, you need a big Les Paul and a loud amp. And like, how is he going to replicate that with a Strat? Like,
a really big Strat, like twice the size.
One of those like huge model Strats.
What pickups do you reckon he'll go with?
I don't know.
Fat 50s? I don't know if they'll be
HH.
I mean,
will it be? Maybe it will be. Maybe it'll be an American Standard HH.
Adrian Smith.
I would imagine.
No, not Adrian Smith. What was the other one?
Dave Murray.
HSH with the mirrored scratch brake.
Can you imagine what a weird world that'd be? Joe Bonamassa comes out first gig, rocking a Dave Murray Strat.
The Floyd Rose.
Yeah, of course. Things have changed.
But I'm just interested.
I imagine he'll be playing vintage stuff. By the looks of the picture that they posted, which was him with the biggest wall of deluxes, they were all vintage.
Really?
So if there's going to be a signature, I imagine it's not one that he'll play, but it'll be based on whatever guitar he uses. There is an
awesome sound you get from those kind of blackface Fenders, like turned all the way up, because they don't drive like a Marshall would, but they're kind of, they've got this
It's like ongoing unlimited headroom, isn't there? It just keeps you know,
just so, keeps going, just and you get that kind of springy, like if you've ever heard, like I want to say Dick Dale's the surf guitarist, right? Who has the signature Strat. When he plays, like, he uses Fenders just turned all the way up, and it's so springy and aggressive. It doesn't have like the power that something like Marshall does, but it's just like so raw and amazing. I wonder whether he'll go for something a bit more like that, a bit more aggro. Be interesting to see. Interesting to see what happens and how things.
Yeah, that's a really cool revelation. I'm into it.
Who is going to take his place as the Les Paul player?
Slash.
No, he's already a Les Paul player.
All of this has
happened before. No, wait, he's already a Les Paul player.
I don't know.
What if John Mayer?
Has John Mayer said what he's going to start using?
No.
Well, I mean, I think the thing is, though, is that Joe Bonamassa plays a wide range of styles. You know, he was taught by Danny Gatton, who's the telly man. And he starts to play where John Mayer's tone is so Strat-like. Yeah.
Well, I mean, he said in those tweets, like, I'm still going to play Strats. I'm just not going to be a signature artist anymore. So we'll see how it shakes out.
He's just really bitter.
Well, you don't know.
His signature Strat was great as well.
Yeah. Do you know what Strat I really like, quickly as an aside? The Kenny Wayne Shepherd.
Yeah.
He's playing soon. Near here. It's in like 2 weeks.
Where's he playing?
I sold
in assembly room.
Crawley.
Where? The Hawth?
I don't know. Somewhere in Crawley.
You say that, I mean, you know, I remember when a guy worked here had Joe Bonamassa tickets in, I think it was like Horsham or something like that.
Really?
Yeah.
And on a similar note, Steve Cropper is playing at the Worthing Assembly Hall. I think we should all go.
Yeah, I saw that.
I think that'd be good. Definitely. Yeah. I think it's like 14th of November or something like that.
But that Kenny Wayne Shepherd, I sold the Sunburst one, and it's one of those strats that I've kind of almost forgotten about. And then I plugged it in and was like, demoing it for this guy. I was like, the neck on it's...
It's like massive.
Chunky.
Yeah. But yeah, we should do that. Maybe we should make it like an official guitar nerds meetup.
What's going on?
Can we do like a live podcast, but the podcast should be us walking from the shop to the train station, then on the train, and then when we get there, we stop.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah,
journey podcast. Do we need to get like, we'll get Madonna mics.
Maybe we could do a little gig report. I don't know, that's kind of a cool idea. I was going to try and see whether we could get in and speak to him.
That'd be cool.
Maybe we can. I'll see what we can do. But yeah, maybe we should make it a Guitar Nerds meet-up 14th of November.
The other thing is who's in town. Jay Maskus. Jay Maskus is in town. Imagine if we could get Jay Maskus on the podcast.
Will he come in again?
Well,
he always comes in, doesn't he?
I mean, Dino Jr. haven't played for a long time, but this is the first solo tour he's done for a while, I think. But yeah, he's playing the horn.
Is it the horn?
Yeah, he's playing the horn, man.
We should go.
He's playing the horn in January.
Because his rig is awesome.
Yeah,
I might get to get a sneak look at that, I think.
I definitely think we should speak to him.
Because, you know, he's got like, he has that like wall of Marshalls and then that awesome like 59 Jazzmaster, and it's just like, oh, and all
so
those
good.
Fuzz pedals.
He's got so many good. Fuzz pedals.
But it's just that time he came in and was like,
that's mine.
Yeah.
So all potential Guitar Nerds meetups, I guess we can all get together. But we should, before we dive into questions, which is what we're going to be doing tonight, we should reiterate, 5th of December is our live podcast.
Are we doing it from the shop?
Yeah, we're doing it from the shop. Yeah, people will come down. I think we've got a few people signed up already. Come down, we will answer your questions live and hang out and, you know, do what we do now, but with some other people in the room. I think it's going to be a cool night. It's going to be good.
I think
it's scared.
Can we edit live?
We can't edit live. No, this is the plan. So we'll be live streaming it as well. Maybe, probably video streaming it. So, you know, get your makeup on and that. Make sure your heads are powdered and stuff.
Okay.
It's going to be good. But yeah, do sign up. I guess that segues into questions, really, because these come from the Facebook group, which is where you can sign up for the live podcast. It's facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds group. But as someone else pointed out, that if you just search on Facebook, GAK podcast, you should be able to find it just as easily that way as well. So do join us there. And you can ask questions like these people have. Ollie says, do I trade in my AC15 C1 for a PRS SE30 head? Opinions on the PRS? The AC15 is just not martially enough for me. Matt Knight, what do you think?
No.
I mean, simple.
Okay, so, you know, we'll be honest. You know, we are a PRS dealer. We've not had any of the SE amps. We didn't really get a try of them, but I don't know. I'm not convinced sometimes when guitar companies go into amp manufacture.
Yeah.
And generally, they just tend to be a kind of copy or something, you know. And obviously, they probably are going for something Marshall-like. But then I think, well, why wouldn't you just buy Marshall amp?
Well, especially
about
like
the
DSL-15. DSL-15 is such a good amp. I sold one yesterday, actually, and I forgot how good it sounded.
It's definitely a crowded market, isn't it? And obviously, we can't, you know, can't give you a full review of the S30 because none of us have heard it.
Yeah.
But we can certainly tell you what else is much more Marshall-y than the AC15, I guess.
And a Marshall would be the best.
I mean, I really like the DSL-15s. I think they're really, really good.
Yep.
Really good combos. The head, especially, is excellent. I mean, I think that head is great because, I mean, it's super small, but 15, I mean, we all think that 15 watts is amp on enough for most bands, you know. Especially if what you want is a Marshall sound, you probably are cranking it. Well, obviously you've got an AC15, so you're going to be using it at that sort of volume anyway. I mean, I just think they're great. I think they sound absolutely banging.
Is the deal still running at the moment where they come with the two pedals as well?
Yeah, I think it is.
You get the reflector and the
regenerator.
Oh, it's regenerator.
I think it's the RG, yeah.
But which are both pretty decent pedals if you wanted to add to the board as well.
Yeah.
What are they? What is the 15 combo coming out at the moment?
469.
There we go. 469. So I guess it's kind of a step sideways from the AC15, isn't it? They're about the same money.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but it's the same with a lot of those amps. At, you know, at that sort of volume. You know, there's the Blues Junior.
Yeah.
As well.
Very good. And that doesn't sound Marshall-y.
No. But you know, the if you, that sort of mid-rangey stuff. There's also the Black Star. HT20.
Yeah, I mean, that would be great.
I can't remember offhand how much they are. They're about the same sort of money.
I think they are almost exactly the same.
I think they're four. Yeah, I think it might be 469 as well. But you know, there's a lot for that. Again, it's difficult because we've not heard the PRS amps. But I mean,
I would say that, I mean, if it's Marshall-y that you want to go to, then Marshall and Black Star are kind of obvious choices.
Yeah.
And you know, we've always loved the Marshall stuff and been super impressed by the new to us Black Star stuff. It's been a bit of a kind of revelation really, because none of us really expected to like it as much as we all have. Yeah.
I've been called out on it a couple of times because people have said, like, you speaking to me have been like, you said the Black Star stuff wasn't good and now you do it, is this just super shallow? And genuinely it is not. I mean, we've said so many times how happy we are to be proven wrong, which happens on a daily basis, because you know, we don't know everything.
I think the thing is that, you're never going to be set to one tone.
No.
And it's, you know, realistically, as salesmen is what we are. So, you know, you're constantly getting impressed with, you know, new stuff. And I always say that for us, especially when we get a new product, if the rep can sell it to you and you're instantly impressed as though you were just someone walking in the door,
it's kind of job done.
You know, that's a good
thing. I mean, it happened
today,
didn't it? We were shown something that I'm not sure we're allowed to talk about.
I think
I don't know if there was.
Let's err on the side of caution.
Well, there was a thing that's quite, you know, it's quite a small.
Basically, it's the ultimate. Everyone will want one for Christmas.
And,
that's all I can
and
say.
Like, both Matty and I were like, this is great.
I just had to call Jay and be like, Jay, you really need to come and hear this.
I was out the back in the bass department, and Matty called me through, and I was instantly like, this is so good, and it is cheap, and it sounds absolutely banging. And so we were initially, and I mean, I'd probably buy one myself because it did sound that good.
I think it was that thing, we kind of never had particularly good vibes about Black Star, because the only time we'd all tried them is at things like rehearsal rooms or borrowing it for a set quickly at gigs.
Yeah.
And if you don't have time to actually sit and try stuff properly, and stuff at rehearsal rooms is always knackered.
Yeah, well, and it's not necessarily the tone you're going for.
Yeah.
If you're turning up to a rehearsal and you're in like some sort of like pop band, you're not necessarily going to want to do Black Star.
The other thing is Drew, who's the one of the guys at Black Star, he came down and he spoke to us when we first took it on, and he said, yeah, I know we've had a bit of a bad rep, but the thing is we changed the factory that we were producing a lot of this stuff from, because you know there were some sort of quality control issues, and we got out of there about 18 months ago, and since then the stuff that we've been producing is A, much better, B, like an order of magnitude more reliable.
Yeah.
At the time I was sort of like, okay, well, we'll see. I completely with it now. I hate selling stuff that, you know, has the potential to come back broken, because it's such a pain. And I'm fully backed the Black Star stuff now. It's great.
Ollie, I hope that's answered your question. Chris says, clean boosts, something that will give me more volume for solos but less in the way of drive. The smaller the better, but still has to be good. What can you recommend?
I don't think there's anything, is there? Not sure there's after that conversation we had earlier. I don't know.
I think the thing is,
does the deco drive essentially?
Effectively, it's saturation. So, you know, it gets you that Echoplex sort of thing, like the Dunlop Echoplex pedal, where you kind of turn it on and it gives you this fat, fuzzy warmth.
Yeah,
and you never want to turn it off. But if you want clean boost, and I know we've talked about it before, I think if you want something that's clean without driving too much, and obviously whenever you add more volume, you've always got the potential to drive.
Yeah.
I think there's two choices. One that we've always mentioned, which is the Pigtronics Class A boost.
Yeah.
Because it makes everything louder without. There's so much headroom in that unit, it just makes everything nice and loud and super clean. Actually, one worth checking out, researching at home, which actually I had a thought of when I saw this, Ernie Ball Active Volume Pedals.
Oh yeah, that's a good point, because they will,
because they give you a 15 dB claim boost. And actually, yeah, that and Boss GE7 graphic equalizer,
that's the one I always used to recommend, because for a long time people didn't care about, I mean, I'm going to say to a broader in a broader way, people didn't care about pedals when I started working here. The pedals that we sold were Boss, Proco Rats, Electro-Harmonix Big Muff, and that was pretty much it.
When I started here, people, you know, I was the only one really into pedals.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we sold loads of multi-effects as well, obviously. And so there just weren't the options. You know, there weren't things like the Dunlop Echoprex preamp, there wasn't the Pictronic stuff. There just weren't decent clean boosts or treble boosts, or, you know, those things that just push the front end.
Yeah.
So GE7 was the best way to do it, and it's still good.
Yeah.
Leave the EQ flat, turn up the volume, get up to 16 dB boost, is that right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
It's bananas, isn't it?
Yeah, and it still works. It still sounds really good. And, you know, it's Boss, so you've got the buffer there, and just does
and
the business.
And it'll never, ever break,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Any other options for that?
I think you know, there's plenty of boosts out there, but the ones that are going to keep your signal the cleanest, Class A boost, maybe an active volume pedal if you wanted to go down a more expensive route, but that or the GE7.
Moog says, interesting podcasts on alternatives last week. How would you say a PRS SE Tremonti stacks up against a 2014 Les Paul Studio?
Tough one. The Studio, I think, for me, wins hands down every time.
Yep.
I just think they're nicer guitar. You know, I think better quality woods, better quality construction.
American built rather than Korean built.
Yeah,
which,
I mean, the
Tremonti
is a great...
You shouldn't get too hung up on that, but it's... I think, on where they're built, but
to just me, they don't feel as class.
Yeah,
know
I know what
I mean.
Is there so the 2014 Studios will be Nitro as well?
Yeah, where there'll be poly on a PRS.
Well,
yeah.
So I way prefer the neck profile one. On most of the Gibsons.
To me, the necks feel a bit sticky. I like, you know, some PRS I do like, but the necks feel a bit sticky on those Tremonti sometimes because they're all painted.
Yeah.
Gibson will be painted as well, but it'll be be Nitro rather
unless,
than
well, unless you go for some of the last remaining
the
Saturns. LPJs
that we've got.
Which I mean they're great guitars.
So fairly kind of sound consensus there that probably the Les Paul is the way to go.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, you're not always gonna,
but they won't look as good. That's, you know, if what you're after is the aesthetics, then the PRS will win sort of 9 times out of 10.
Good flame top. And there's option for a trim on the Tremontis as well, isn't there?
Yeah.
I think you get
you won't get a Les Paul with that kind of... Yeah, well, like a floating trim, not a Floyd.
You've got to go for an Access, which is 2799, you know, which will look banging, but it's...
It's a lot more money.
It's an awful lot more money.
Could buy a lot of Tremontis for that.
What pickups are in those Tremontis? Are they just their own proprietary?
Just their own, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think the Studio's got to be...
I mean, you could look at... I think the thing is, you know, people go, oh, you know, I could look at pickup options. But for me, pickup options only really come into play when I've bought something sub 200 quid.
Yeah.
I think if I've spent nearly £600, I want it to sound pretty good.
Should be pretty good out of the box. Yeah.
Which they do, but they're definitely not as nice as the Studios.
Alan says, can anyone recommend someone to repair chips and dings? Looking for a quality job, I have an original one Aria SB1000, which I lent to my girlfriend's brother for a spell of gigging. Big mistake. It was pristine and it came back a bit worse for wear.
Good story about it on a similar line. My mate, who worked here for a while, his friend came and went, you've got to help me out,
Do
you remember this?
Yeah.
My mate lent me his Saturn, it was a Saturn PRS Custom 24, do you remember those?
Really
went,
soft.
Yeah, and he went, I took it on tour, and now look, and he just turned it over, and this guy had like metal bracelets like halfway up both wrists, and then a massive belt buckle, no paint at all on the back. And he was like, I've got to give it back to him, and I've ragged it on tour. And he was just like, wow, you have absolutely destroyed it. He's like, because they're satin, there's no going back to that, really, unless you sand it all the way down and then repaint it and then redo it.
And I guess, I mean, those guitars, they just kind of feel soft because the finish is so thin.
Yeah.
The police will come and get you if you... It's an ambulance.
It's an ambulance.
Don't joke.
Guitar police.
Yeah, don't joke.
Guitar
doctors.
Yeah, that's
guitar
it.
Guitar doctors. So, in terms of how we can fix this SB1000, you could bring it to us.
Yeah, a Graham R-Tech is some sort of magician when it comes to refinishes.
He's unbelievable.
One of the best ones I ever saw was a guy who had taken his Les Paul to a shop and they went, yeah, just use this. And they'd recommended some sort of like bleach.
Like metal abrasive.
Metal abrasive. And he sprayed it on there and it wasn't obviously nitro safe. So where he'd rubbed it in and it cleaned it, it then was still on there and it just reacted and then just started bubbling. And Graham brought it back and the guy went, wow, I can't tell.
Yeah.
But the good thing is, because he does everything in proper nitro, it looks better.
Yeah.
I mean, he's done a couple of, you know, like real high-end ones. He did my purple telly.
Yeah.
He's done some really high-end ones.
And my purple.
And he did your purple telly.
Yeah. He showed me some pictures of, he did some Crash style guitars for people.
Oh, like the artist Crash, who's sort of graffiti.
He did all the Clapton ones. He actually finished a guitar for Clapton as well.
There we go. I mean, I guess there's no higher praise really than the...
And he said it's one of his best achievements is the fact that even though he refinished this guitar and Clapton never played it, it was in the spotlight for an entire gig on a DVD, on a Clapton DVD.
Wow.
That he did. Clapton went, yeah, I want it refinished in this, and it was like nail polish that he'd found, like this weird nail colour. Gramsci put it in his can and sprayed it away. But I've seen guitars with chunks.
Yeah.
And they've come back unnoticeable.
So there we go. Alan, I guess that's our kind of... I think you reading in the Facebook group, I think you're from Portsmouth, which I guess is not too far from us if you want to get it done properly.
It's worth the travel, I think. Yeah, if you want to get it done properly.
Come and say hello to Jay and Matt. I'm sure they'll be here when you're in here.
Always.
And drop the guitar in. And Graham's turnaround for refinishes is what? A couple of weeks? 3 weeks?
It's about a month to 5 weeks because he uses nitro and he does proper layers. You have to... You can't buff nitro while it... Even though nitro is touch... I learned a lot from him. Even though nitro is touch dry... almost instantly, as soon as you spray it, it's touch dry. It's not actually hard and dry for about 4 weeks.
Okay.
So if you try and buff it before it's...
It'll just smears it.
Yeah.
Right. So. Okay. So there we go. Alan, look forward to seeing you and, do drop us an email or a call to kind of get it booked in. Steve says, I need to be able to practice with just my guitar, some device and my laptop. I know I could use my Pod HD500, I do sometimes, but would like something smaller. I want to be able to play along with YouTube/Media Player/Audacity, etc. through headphones. If it also acted as a CD/DVD drive, that'd be a bonus, but not a deal breaker. Any suggestions?
Call Pandora Mini.
Okay.
Really into them. I think they sound great. I mean, I don't think you're going to get anything that acts as a CD DVD drive.
What about the amp that we've got downstairs?
Not that.
The Tascam GA100 CD. I mean, look it up.
Look it up and please...
Please buy it from
please
us.
Please buy it from us. I've priced up today. It's half price.
What price is it up at?
$489.
Right. Okay. Sweet. That's outrageous. Best not say any more on that. Feel free to do your own research.
If it's guitar, a mystery device, and a laptop, then I would say call Pandora Mini, Pocket Pod.
Yeah.
Yeah?
I mean, you like the sounds in the pod, Pocket Pod. And they work really well. The same sort of sounds. Not the same processor, obviously, but, you know, you can plug headphones into that. I suppose it depends how you're going to do it, because... I suppose you just want the device and you're going to plug the headphones into the device and then you're going to have the laptop's just going to provide the sound source, so that's going to go into an auxiliary input.
I mean, I would say that the Pocket Pod is probably the best solution. I've still got one, I still use it occasionally.
Can you use them for recording?
Yeah, I use it for recording all the time. Yeah. I don't think it's audio over USB, but you could do like line out of it into an audio interface.
Yeah.
Yeah, highly recommended, really. And it's got an auxiliary in, so...
Yeah.
What about the other option would be the Vox amp plugs?
Yeah, but you can't record... They can't use them as an interface.
No, but we're not saying that... I mean, you can't use the Pocket Pod as an interface either.
Well, okay, yeah, I suppose.
What you're wearing?
Yeah,
Amphones.
I've got some Amphones on
right
now.
That would be good, because their headphones go straight into the... and they plug straight into your guitar, and then you just auxiliary input into those from the laptop.
So just wearing the headphones, you'd have nothing on the desk apart from the laptop.
Yeah. That'd be cool.
Yeah. And they sound alright, actually, as well. It's kind of
they're,
like...
Are they Sennheisers?
They're
Audio-Technica.
Audio-Technica. Who designed them. But they've got like amp modelling software built into the headphones.
Which you can turn off as well, so you don't have to have
those. Yeah, I'm using them just as normal headphones right now. They sound good, actually. They sound better than my in-ears that I was wearing last week.
Yeah.
When I was feeling rough. Feeling ropey.
How are you feeling now?
Yeah, fine. I'm still alive. Don't worry. I'm still here. Back to podcast again.
Good.
And then I suppose the other option would be going for something, if you're using an iPad, going for like an iTrack Studio, using the little interface. Yeah. So you go straight into that device, link straight into your iPad, and then use, you know, various apps or whatever. GarageBand.
Yeah, you could use GarageBand to generate the guitar sounds. And
I'd say Pocket Pod would be would be my, and they're inexpensive. They're what, £69?
100%, definitely. Mark says, simple question to the guys who actually sell guitars for a living: are the new Gibson Les Paul standards worth the price increase? So,
we tackled this slightly in the group.
Yep.
And
I didn't actually put anything into that.
Oh, did you not? The short answer is we don't know for sure yet, because we haven't had one through yet. We have had the Studios and the Classics.
Classics.
And there's there's a few big changes. So I guess we should outline the sort of the changes that you've got. So the first thing you'll notice is a brass nut, which I think is absolutely banging. I think it's great.
It's a really good upgrade.
I mean, I really like the brass saddles that you get on a Telecaster. So having a brass nut on a Les Paul gives you that sort of chimey, jangly, kind of super resonant.
If you've ever plugged in an Yngwie Malmsteen Strat, they've got a brass nut, and you strum one chord on those. I know they're scallop boards, but they are a really resonant guitar.
So I think that sounds absolutely banging. The neck profile is very different. The neck profile, it's weird. It's like a 12 to 16 inch radius?
No, it's not compound. It's still 12, but the neck is wider, and it's a slim taper, so they feel much flatter, even though the radius is the same.
So that's not kind of my I'm not kind of into that, but that's just, you know, that would be the case.
I think they've just made them a little bit more modern. I think the thing is, if you buy a Les Paul standard, they are worth the money if you want something really modern feeling.
Absolutely.
Know, if you want something more traditional, you go for your Les Paul traditional. That's kind of what they're for.
Also, the other thing that's worth noting with the 2015s is the Mini Tune has been rebranded as the G-Force system, and it's had a complete aggregate upgrade.
It's a complete firmware upgrade.
Nick from Gibson was here last week, and he was running through with us the sort of how it all works now, and it's brilliant. It works so well. It's because what we used to do is you'd sort of strum, and then it would start doing it, and then you'd strum again, and it would sort of get. He's just like, no, strum once, it will do it.
Yeah.
It will do it, and maybe you'll need to pluck an individual string the first time. Probably not.
And what it does now is, I think the tuners have been programmed, obviously, with something much more complex than just like, this is what an A should be. As soon as you select a tuning, all the machine heads move before you actually strum it, so the machine heads already move into place.
Yeah.
To roughly where they think they should be.
To where it should be.
Yeah.
But you can do things like, so say for example, if you're really into low tunings.
This, I think, is
like
excellent.
Really low tunings, and then your mate picks up and goes, oh yeah, mini E tune, and then tries to put it in standard, and you've set it up and drop C, the tension's just going to... ruin the whole thing. So what you can do is, if you use your Les Paul for down tunings, you can actually lock out the higher tunings on the device itself.
Okay.
So before there was there was three programmable. There was three banks. The first bank was your sort of standard tune, you know, more standard tuning. So E, E flat, dadgad, G, open G, and a couple of others. That was the green bank, the first bank. Then there's the red bank, which is slightly more sort of avant-garde open tunings. And then there was the blue bank, which is totally, you know, you choose, you know, you can pre-program them. There's two more banks, which I think are yellow and pink, I think it is.
White and yellow, I think.
Okay.
Something like that.
But to get to those, you have to sort of hack the... Not hack it.
It's like in a different mode,
essentially. Yeah, you have to change the mode, and you can't then immediately go back to standard tuning, which I think is brilliant, because as Nick was saying, you know, if you've...
If you've got a set of 14s on there or something.
Well, absolutely. If you're going down to like... If you've got, or even just like 12 to 60 and you're playing in like drop A, which a lot of people do, and like a Les Paul will handle that once it's set up correctly. Yeah. If you've got that and then all of a sudden you accidentally tune it up, you can't accidentally tune it up. You've got to unlock that mode again.
Yeah.
So I think that's a really, really smart idea.
My favourite feature was the fact that, so now when you're creating your own tunings, you can tell the system, you can tell the mini tune system to do two things. You can tell it to snap tune, so you just have to roughly get it. So say you're going to tune the E to a D. You only have to get it roughly to a D, and it'll just go, so you want it to be a D. So every time once you've saved that tuning in there, it will automatically snap to a D. If you're, say, for example, doing like... altered or sweetened tunings to like an old piano,
yeah.
you can pitch it out of tune.
So you can microtonal.
Yeah. If you want everything not to be, you know, half a step down, but you want everything to be like another 20 cents yeah. lower, you can tell the tuners to do that, and right. it won't snap to that tuning. And then when you turn it, it'll tune it back to that. So it's good. It's like calibrated tuning, effectively.
Yeah, yeah. It that sort of thing is kind of relevant. When I remember about 6 months ago or so, it was a bit of a quiet day, and I went up to the acoustic department, and the boys up there were trying to figure out a Tom Petty song. They were like, doesn't quite make like this sort of sounds, and it's just basically they tuned to ear. Tom Petty had obviously just gone, yeah, that's an E, I guess, whatever. Just everyone just tuned to this, and they tuned off that, but it wasn't quite in tune. So when you were trying to play along, so if ever you're doing anything like that, you know, just tune, you know, that's that,
or otherwise. A lot of the Beatles stuff isn't in tune, where it's very speeded, so the whole song they kind of listen to it and go, we played that a bit slow, and it's like it could have a bit more kick. Let's just re-record it back onto another tape, but we'll just make it run a bit faster. Yeah. And of course, there's no like
is it Strawberry Fields Forever, where you hear that, and that's two separate takes, isn't it? Where one sped up and one slowed down at the same time, and they just so happen to hit the same pitch in the middle.
That's them just doing it by hand.
That wasn't planned, but they slowed one, sped one up, and then they had to make pitch in the middle.
Absolutely bonkers. So,
but apart from that, they are almost the same as the 2014s in terms of the weight relieving.
Yep.
There's some pickup changes.
They're now... A lot of them
have got the 61s in, which actually I quite like. They first appeared on the piece.
Yeah, as I was talking to Ben from Gibson, he was saying that, you know, the thing is, I think that what they'd realised is a lot of the pickups from 2014 were actually quite similar and so PAF-like that they were almost too woolly and too bassy, so they've kind of added in some pickup options for different guitars that are a little bit brighter and cut through a little bit well.
61s are a bit like that. They didn't like... they're quite bright and quite aggressive sounding. And they first appeared on the 2014 piece, which is a guitar that, I mean, to be honest, not a lot of people bought because it's very esoteric in how it looks. But everyone who tried it was like, these pickups are awesome. So they've put that in a lot of the new 2015s.
The 2015 Traditional has got a new 59 Classic instead of the 57 Classics, which, again, we've not tried yet. I'm assuming it will be going for that sort of 59 vibe, you know, so you can get a guitar that sounds like a 59 but isn't, you know, $4,000 or whatever, you know.
Just quickly to speak to the price, because there's not much more to say about the guitars themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of good things going on, as we've kind of already discussed. To speak to the price, speaking to Gibson, they're basically discontinuing a lot of the cheaper custom shop stuff and just focusing on the
historics.
Things like the Voss Historics.
Yeah.
So the real high-end stuff. So at the moment, there's still a kind of blurring point between the low-end custom shop and where these standards sit. That will eventually go, and I think the way they've done it is they've basically shifted some resources over to producing the 2015s.
Right, okay.
So, you know, we haven't seen the standards yet, so we can't really speak to it yet, but in theory,
they're going to be like
the quality of the finishing's going to be better, the quality of the setup's going to be better than anything you were getting in 2014, or, you know, the previous years. And if you're looking at a custom shop, you know, it won't be like, oh, I've got the choice for a custom shop for that money or a standard. It will be, no, the custom shop is double the money, and you know, there'll probably be nicer guitars because custom shop generally stuff generally is. But yeah, that's kind of where we're at.
It's always difficult when people go, you know, are they worth the price increase? Because I mean, where do you put that? I mean,
well, yeah.
How do you put that? Is it worth?
How do you quantify it? Yeah,
I think.
I mean, to what? Because you rode in 2014, and should I have waited and bought 2015? But then more money.
The other thing is that a Les Paul standard is not what a Les Paul standard from the 90s was.
I think that
was what a traditional, or kind of to some extent what a classic is now.
Yeah.
A Les Paul standard, the way Gibson are thinking about the Les Paul standard now, is like, we're pushing the technology on this, and whether, you know, it's something that you personally like or you personally don't like, they are trying to innovate with the standard. And if you want an old school Les Paul, get traditional.
Yeah. I think traditional, we did check that. Isn't traditional the only one without the mini?
I don't think the traditional's got the G-Force. Again,
no, traditional has got the G-Force.
Oh, it has.
Yeah, the only guitars without the Supreme and the Derek Trucks signature.
Okay. Are you sure it's got them? Because it didn't say it on the spec.
Yeah, yeah, they've all everything's right, okay. GeForce, even the Les Paul Juniors. And we should,
I saw the Les Paul Juniors.
We should also say 2015 Gibsons, Les Paul Juniors are back
can't
in the range.
Wait. Yeah. Can't wait, cannot wait to see them.
And they should be super fun. If you're looking for a guitar to mess around with different tunings, the GeForce is on there. Again, we're yet to work, you know, have a go on the new necks or anything like that. But you know, it's a Les Paul Junior, and they're doing it in TV yellow.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah. What more can you ask for?
Exactly.
I cannot wait to see it. Like, we haven't had one for, it feels like forever since we had a.
It must be Les Paul 3 years.
It must be 3 years, and yeah. I cannot wait to see them.
Definitely. Let's move on. We'll have loads more to say on the 2015s once we've got our hands on all of them.
Yeah.
Definitely. Definitely. So, Adam says, what do you guys think would be the best delay pedal for bass? Mainly looking to make soundscapes plus interludes between songs and guitar solos plus thicken out trippy sections in a three-piece band.
Oh, where is he when you need him?
I know. He's the perfect man to answer this question. But let's give it a go.
Space Echo.
Yeah, Space Echo and
for
a...
bass,
Space
really?
Echo oh, and yeah. Space Echo and
you
a Ditto.
You ring everything through us.
If you want to do something on a relative budget, but you want it to sound wicked and mental, Space Echo and a Ditto, I think, because you can just like start off something with the Space Echo, loop it, and then do something else weird with the Space Echo, loop that.
Although actually, I will throw a spanner in the works because actually, I do think they are, since I own one, and I think it is maybe slightly better. The TC Electronic Alter Ego V2.
Better than a Space Echo.
It's got a Space Echo setting on it.
It is a great pedal.
It's got, the thing I like about that is it's instant weirdness. Like a lot of the presets are just, okay, this is a weird sounding delay.
Yeah.
Whereas
yeah.
the Space Echo, you have to sort of find it and then kind of remember.
Well, you sort of
have
to turn the intensity up and
it's,
whatever.
And it always sounds like a Space Echo, where this sounds like some other thing.
Yeah, don't get me wrong, the Alter Ego is banging. I think that's a totally wicked pedal.
Do you know what I'm going to say? Because I think those two, they're certainly great delays. I think with bass, you might need a bit more definition, even if you're trying to do something a bit weird. DD3.
Yeah.
Boss DD3, because you'll just get a bit more clarity out of it, because it's a, you know, straight ahead digital delay.
Do they
delay.
Still have the freeze, the hold function on?
The
it's
6
not the freeze,
does. Sorry, DD7 does even.
Okay. Right.
So maybe a DD7, that'll give you choices between doing something a bit weird and doing the straight up digital delay,
yeah.
which you're not going to get really from either of the two other two mentioned.
Yeah.
I also think that we don't mention it enough, MXR Carbon Copy.
Yeah.
Still think is a great analogue delay.
Yeah, 100%.
Really underrated.
Yeah, 100%. I think we've just kind of maybe forgotten about it because we've been
blown away by all the other delays that have come
that's
out.
That's the thing, is like that was, you know, talking about, you know, the good old days when, you know, if someone wanted a pedal, they wanted a Rat or a Big Muff.
Carbon
you know,
Copy kind of
when
started
when that came about, that was such a game changer for us. You know, it
and
really
we hate
was.
Using that term.
Yeah.
It really was.
But it really was a game changer.
It's an analog delay. We hadn't had one for ages.
And it just sort of...
I just remember we were selling like...
Well, the Ibanez 89. That
I mean,
was
we, must have,
yeah,
we must have been
loads
selling...
More money.
We must have sold 10, 20 in a week in the shop, Carbon Copies. Easily.
They're so good.
I still think
every other person was like,
need a Carbon Copy.
Or someone would go, yeah, what's good? And we'd go, Carbon Copy. And I went, yeah, great, sounds awesome.
I remember there was a time when my flatmate was just running everything through the Carbon Copy in the same way that you do with a Deco now. He was taking entire mixes, putting it through the Carbon Copy, keeping the delay super low, and putting the modulation on, but
on,
really
subtle,
so it just sounded like a tape machine. Now you just get a Deco. I want the Carbon Copy to come back. I think
we should push it.
Definitely. So there we go. So there's some options for a bass. I mean, pretty much anything. If you just want to sound weird, then bass for a delay pedal does sort of sound weird.
Yeah.
The thing that should not be. And it is. let's talk. Matt says, anyone got any experience of the Mesa Boogie TA-15 lunchbox amp head?
You didn't have to put it on the forum. You could have just asked us.
Yeah, I just don't know.
The Orange Tiny Terror also looks great. I mean, I thought you'd know that.
Yeah.
But also want a bit of sparkly clean too, and they don't do that. The Mesa seems like it will cover most bases.
Any thoughts?
Yes, Matt, we've got thoughts. The TA-15 is one of the best amps I've ever used in a band setting. I took one to a band practice and it sounded so much better than anything we had ever used before.
The End by Mark Packham.
The End by Mark Packham. I mean, for the sort of stuff I was doing, I can't really speak to the cleans, but the drives that we used on it sounded immense. Like, so I mean, the completely different to a Tiny Terror. Not muddy, like really kind of crisp and American sounding. But yeah, I mean, what are your guys' thoughts?
Well, I mean, I was going to say, I think I've got to put it out there now. Boogie, they've kind of gone, do you know what? We've made, you know, single recs, dual recs, probably some of the go down in history, some of the best amps ever made.
Yeah.
You know, they were like a modern classic because they only came out, what, late 80s, I suppose?
Something like that. I think it's the mid 80s, something like that.
And then they've gone, but you know what? People don't want a switchable between 150 and 150 watts. So now they brought out the TA-15 and then they went, mini rectifier. And then they went, mini rectiverb. So then it sounds like a Fender, but it's got the Boogie twist on it.
Yeah.
And then they're like, but then if you want everything else that we've made, mini Mark Fives. And they've kind of gone, well, you know, they've covered the bases. And TA-15, transatlantic,
started
the name says it all. Fender ones. Well, I mean, Fender both sides, really. Because you've got
And Vox.
So one side, you've got kind of bright Fender twin style cleans, and then you've got Voxy bright chiminess. And then on the other side, you've got Fender tween, little bit tweed, like a little bit darker. And then high gain Marshall. It just covers so many bases.
I think that if you want clean, if you want a clean amp,
don't buy a Tiny Terror.
Well, firstly, don't buy a Tiny Terror. But if you want a clean amp, and you don't want a Fender, like if the Fender, like the thing is with the Fender stuff is unless you go for a Supersonic, unless you're a smart fella and you go for a Supersonic.
I mean, you are a smart fella.
Well, what can I tell you? And you go for a Supersonic. The drives, unless you really crank it, you don't get a great drive. You know, the hot rods are an exception to this rule, but even so, I think, you know, you've really got to push it to get a good drive sound out of a Fender.
And like we said before, it's not like a drive sound.
Yeah.
It's that Dick Dale, like surfy, like really aggressive kind of.
So if you want something that will do, that will be, have the versatility of like a really sparkly clean sound and like a cool drive sound, I think Boogie is pretty much the only option.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're looking at something like a PV Classic. Probably not even the Delta Blues, you know, probably the PV Classic series.
I think even the drive channels on there. I mean, there's not much to set those apart from a Deluxe in reality.
Absolutely. I think the drive is probably a little bit better on the PV, whereas the clean doesn't quite stand up to a Deluxe.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think if you want the versatility of the sparkly clean and the banging drive, it's really difficult to look past the Boogie stuff. And I think the Mini Mark Fives, we've not seen them yet. But I'd be tempted to say hold out and go for one of those because
quite a lot more money though.
Are they a lot more
than a TA-15?
The 15 is what, 12.99.
TA-15s, they're 999.
Yeah, are they 999? Okay, right. Yeah. Okay, so it will be more.
That's kind of your entry level point into Boogie heads now, I think, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah,
yeah. And they're so good.
They are wicked.
So you've got that for kind of slightly less gain, and then you've got the mini rec, which is 10.99, which is just going to cover your rectifier time.
Yeah, the mini rec's great. All of those amps are great. All of them.
Definitely. So there we go. So yes, Tiny Terrors are great, but they will definitely not do sparkly clean. They couldn't be any further from sparkly clean.
Weirdly, I think obviously it's a lot more money, but the Dark Terror, the clean that you get off of that, you know, you have to really keep the gain down.
Yeah.
But the I really like the Dark Terror. I think Dual Darks, sorry.
Yes.
The Dual Darks, if you for the orange side of things, I thought were great. Again, a great mix of like heavy dark sounds and like the clean sound. I was really impressed with.
Not bigger box though.
Yes. Yeah. It's not a lunchbox. Yeah.
No. Adam says, "How good are the James Tyler Variaxes? Do they play well and do they sound authentic? Are they more hassle than they're worth, or they're really that good? How good is the workbench? Also, to what level can you modify sounds? I'm curious about them, but all these videos on YouTube seem to be by Lunsix themselves, and they aren't going to put their own product down. Also, I used to own a Variax 300, but sold it because the amount of wires required to make it work wasn't worth the effort." Jay, you speak about the guitar. Matt, you speak about the workbench, because you both definitely, I know what you're going to say already.
I keep forgetting that the questions that get put on the podcast forum are supposed to be answered on the podcast, and I just get excited and I answer them anyway. So I will just be reiterating myself. But my thoughts on the James Tyler Variaxes is, if you liked the theory of a Variax, but you didn't like the way that the Variax played, you are also a smart fella. I personally never got on with the old Variaxes. I didn't really understand where the appeal was. I thought they sounded very good, but it, as in terms of like holding a guitar, I didn't get it. It didn't feel right to me. And as such, when they brought out the JTVs, I thought I was super skeptical because they were a lot more money, and I was just like, I don't know what's going to happen. They are great guitars. The pickups themselves, even if you're not using the actual software, the pickups themselves are great. They sound like absolutely wicked guitars. I definitely think that it's worthwhile.
Matt Knight, Workbench.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's worth pointing out that in the old Variaxes and new Variaxes, that all the models are exactly the same,
yeah.
but they use a much better processor
yeah.
in there.
Yeah.
Workbench, I have used and I have messed around with, but not to like a really, really lengthy extent. And it, do you know what? It is kind of cool. You know, if you're really into kind of modifying and recording and doing all that stuff on a computer, it's a great bit of software. But actually, you know what? I would just have it as a cool guitar to plug in and have some extra tones on it.
Yeah, I mean,
I think Jay hit the nail on the head. It feels and plays like a proper guitar. You play it and forget there's all that extra
yeah,
stuff on
absolutely,
it.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
And then you're like, hold on, baritone?
Yeah,
wicked.
I mean, all definitely. Of a sudden it's baritone telly. And the other thing with them is, I think possibly, and I don't want to get in trouble for saying this, but possibly when they first came out, they were probably a little bit too much money.
Yeah.
But now they've brought the price right down. They're like just over £700, and currently they're offering £100 cash back. So it's like a £650. It's less than £650, and it's, I think for that price, it's like really difficult to go wrong because you've got so much in there that you can mess around with. And it's just brilliant.
Have they improved the battery life? Because that was always my issue before.
Well, I mean,
before.
They use a lithium-ion battery now.
Oh, of course they do. Because before it was just double A's, and you're like, oh, I'm just
double A's.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah, yeah.
What,
well,
six
do you remember
double
when we
A's
sold the X demo one we had, and
oh,
we
God,
were like,
yeah,
we got to plug
yeah.
it in. And before that, and if you didn't have the double A's, you had to plug it into the hub, and then the hub, which is what he's obviously saying there about a lot of wires, because then you had to plug it into the hub, and then the hub had to be powered. And then
the hubs are completely gone now, right?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, you don't. You just.
Just
to power it, and you only have to use the power if you want to use the if you want to use the software. You can
yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
Can, the pickups are passive.
So it will always work as a guitar
yeah,
now.
Yeah, absolutely. So the
but no, even the modelling works just through a normal guitar lead, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But if you say your battery runs
yeah,
out,
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Say the battery runs out.
Oh
like,
yeah, yeah,
yeah.
It won't
but
stop
the way that you charge the battery is yeah, you just the battery's just like a it just is probably the size of like an EMG pickup, and it just sits in the back of the guitar. You open the flap.
Take it out. Put it in the charger.
And you're away.
Excellent. So there we go. Much more appealing by the sound of things
yeah.
than the previous series.
Yeah, they're great. I think it's...
Oh, and they can be powered alternatively through a pod.
Yes. Yeah,
through
yeah,
through Ethernet.
Yeah,
cable.
Yeah,
and then obviously you plug that into the DT25 and you got yourself the dream rig.
The dream rig, yeah.
So I'm going to skip the next question and we'll come back to it in a minute. Yep. Ollie says, does anyone have any experience with the Laney IRT212? I'm in the market for one. On paper, they look great and are 8 ohm, which I need to for my power soak, but do they sound good?
They do.
IRT cabs.
They work really well if you're using something with a lot of gain.
Okay.
Just
what, not bottom end or?
Yeah, because the IRT amps have got quite a lot of gain in them. They're quite, you know, the IRTs have got some claim, but if you use a lot of drive,
yeah,
and they use quite a saturated, but quite focused drive rather than like an orange, which is kind of a little bit more fuzzy around
yeah,
the edges.
Yeah.
Yeah, they work really well. And they are a good standard cab. I mean, I still stick by PPC 212 is probably one of the best cabs you can buy, but they are a lot more money. You know, they're
yeah.
like £550. I think the IRT cabs are 200-300 if
yeah.
that I think.
I mean that's pretty impressive for a 212, isn't it?
And they're good
kind of
and they've got handles that are instead of in the sides, they're in the two top corners
yeah.
in the middle.
Yeah.
So you're not like halfway down and then they're digging into your elbows, so you just pick it up by the top, so they're much easier to
yeah,
carry
yeah.
around.
Do you remember we picked it up when we were clearing out for the Albert Lee event?
Oh yeah.
You and me picked it up and we were like, oh yeah, this is right.
It's a good idea.
Yeah,
oh, the orange handles. Like, I love orange cabs, I love orange stuff. The handles, if you've got one of the 412s and you pick it up in the wrong way, your wrist is gone.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they sound amazing, and one of the reasons they sound amazing is because they're really bloody heavy.
Yeah.
But you it'll just snap your wrist if you pick it up in the wrong way, whereas this Laney was kind of did the business.
And they're good. They're thick wood. They sit nicely on the floor, so you get a good amount of bass. Bottom end
and they're
well.
Definitely voiced for kind of more metal-y type
yeah.
stuff, aren't they? I mean,
yeah.
that's what they've done with the whole Ironheart range, really, is just,
yeah.
Full metal.
Yeah, but good cabs.
Excellent. Frank says, hi, is there anything out there like the Tech 21 Power Engine, which I assume is a power amp? By the sound, I didn't actually have time to look it up, but do that. But let's, for now, say that it's just a power amp. I can't seem to find anywhere anymore.
Nice, congratulations.
I plan to use my ME80 and other amp pedals, so is there anything else I need? So there's no need for a valve preamp. Am I right? I could just plug into the return of an effects loop. That would broaden my options significantly. Frank, I'm sorry about completely stumbling over your words there. Basically, he's using digital modelling type pedals, and he wants to go into a power amp.
Yeah, the power engine. The power engine is an all-purpose, multifunction powered extension cabinet, just like the Laney IRTX expansion cabinet.
Okay,
the one that you've got.
The one that I've got.
Yeah.
The 200-watt solid-state power amp cab, multi-purpose, ultimate little thing that is wicked.
Okay.
So they're
talk about the RTX.
So they're a 200-watt solid-state amp, first of all, so you can plug a guitar straight in, and you've got volume-based treble. With either no emulation, 1x12 emulation, or 4x12 emulation. You can then also use it as a power soak in between the head and the cab, so you can go head, IRT, cab, and it'll work as a powered monitor.
Okay.
It's got an effects loop, so in theory, you can have it as a powered monitor, but just have your effects running through that, so your other cab can remain completely dry, which is quite cool. And you can use them in stereo as well, so you can link one to another. So if you're using effects loop and you've got two of them, it'll automatically pan the effects in stereo. But if you're using it like an effects loop and in between your head and the cab, you can go ahead into the IRT, into another IRT, into your cab.
Oh my god.
But then just run your ME80 in the effects loop of the IRT,
yeah.
So you can have a dry, wet, or a wet, dry, wet setup. So your modulations and effects just go to the expansion cabs.
Yeah.
But it just any situation you could think of that you might need it for, it works. It's got a DI out for direct recording.
What?
So you can go into... So what I do at home is I go guitar amp head out into the IRT, into the cab, and then just take a DI feed, unemulated, straight into my...
We need to do a video on this.
Interface.
Firstly,
they're awesome.
For people who are looking to buy one.
Secondly
for me, I understand how it works.
But yeah, because I was looking up that and then missed the rest of the question.
He just wants to plug an ME80 into something that will make a noise.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you could just use that. It's a 200-watt.
It's wedge monitor as well, isn't it? It can be
a wedge monitor. Yeah, you can use it as PA. But yeah, it's a 200-watt solid-state power amp. Effectively, that's what it is. But it's got this all-purpose voiced speaker and tweeter.
Laney is such a bonkers company that they would think to do that.
It's such a bonkers product that unless you need to buy one and then just use it and then
to
you
work out how it works.
Yeah, but there's so many wicked situations that I've thought, oh yeah, that would work really well. And then
is it? It's kind of I get the impression it's kind of like an iPad where like if you don't have one, you're like I don't need it.
Yeah.
I don't need it. And then when you get one, you're all of a sudden you realise that you're sort of sat round at 7:25 on a Thursday evening with your mates doing a podcast,
right.
And the entire time you've been there, all you've been doing is looking stuff up on your iPad.
I would say, yeah. I'm assuming this question went up on the Facebook group.
It did, yeah.
And get on there.
I haven't
been on there for a while. But I mean, I think that would be the best thing because in theory, it's got an effects loop on there, but it's not an effects loop like an effects loop on a valve amp. So you can run anything through it. It won't matter. It's not sensitive about distortion pedals or anything like that. So that's why you can run everything in true stereo with just one effects loop because it automatically tells the right to go to the other amp if you plug two in.
That's bananas.
So it's really clever. So I've been using it as rather than running three amps, using it as an expansion cab for a stereo setup.
So it's expansion rather than extension.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Expansion cab. So, you know, so if I've got a stereo setup, you can just run that as an extra cab.
Yeah.
But you can run effects direct to
and they're not much money either, are they?
I think they're £300, something like that. So it's, to be honest, for what you get in there,
yeah.
Because I've plugged acoustic in and gone, I just want to hear acoustic, and then recorded acoustic, amazing. Because you just DI feed straight out. But because it's emulated as well,
sounds all right.
Yeah.
Wow, so there we go. So a kind of roundabout way of saying everyone should buy a Laney IRTX.
Yeah.
Okay, one last question, let's just take one answer each, I guess. Scott says, which guitar and amp combination is made in heaven? J. Cross.
You're all pissed enough. I'm not answering this question. Bar and a Blues Junior.
Is that really what you're going to say?
Yeah,
Bar and a Blues Junior.
Of course, that's what I'm going to say.
Matt Knight.
You don't agree?
It's weird to think that Fender guitars into Fender amps. Because I know I said earlier about, obviously, PRS venturing into the world of amps.
Yeah, and but I think it's not the same, is it? Fender
it's not.
Did it a
I
long
mean,
time ago.
Fender Strat into a Fender amp. To me, that's what I mean. That's the sound in my head, and that's the sound that I like the most.
Rickenbacker into an AC30. That's a good sound.
That is a really good sound.
Rickenbacker 330 into an AC30. That's
I mean, let's
pull
it into
sound.
A Marshall. I mean.
Yeah.
I'm going to say... Fender Precision Bass
into a Bassman.
I was going to actually say Ampeg SVT, Valve SVT.
Yeah.
If we're just talking about sound, then that is the best sounding bass.
Yeah, it is.
A million miles.
Yeah.
If we're talking about practicality and perhaps also reliability, then I would say maybe, you know, the Mark Bass. I mean, I think that little Mark head that I've got is the best, one of the best sounding bass amps that isn't an SVT that I've ever heard.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you can find the right SVT and you get the right P bass, that is the best bass sound.
Yeah, 100%. No, I agree. Yeah. I agree.
So I would say, thanks to Scott for the question. Do post up your dream guitar and amp combinations on the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds group, or just search for GAK podcast on Facebook and you'll find it. Thanks very much everyone for questions this evening. Do keep them coming in and we'll keep answering them. If you do want to do that, like I said, sign up to the group. You can also follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/GAK music, or on Twitter, twitter.com/GAK_co_UK, or just as normal people say, @GAK_co_UK. Also, Joe Branton, he is actually good for something. He's been putting up a lot of pictures.
I
know, just tell me about it. He's been putting up a lot of awesome pictures of guitars
on the GAK Instagram,
which is I think it's instagram.com/GAK_music, which makes everything complicated because it's like a mix of Twitter and Facebook. But if you just search, I don't know, I think if you search GAKstagram...
Yeah, I thought it was Gakstagram.
It's not. It's GAK_music. But if you search Gakstagram, you will you can find it there. You can follow me on Twitter, @Mark_random. I haven't been tweeting that much because I've been at work a lot. We did that Albert Lee clinic this week. And yeah, I've not had time. But I've got a whole week off next week. So if you want to hear me talk about sitting in my pants and watching Jeremy Kyle, you are in for a treat. Boys. J Cross, how can people find you?
Shoot me an email, j.cross@gak.co.uk, or follow me on Twitter, @jaybm1. I'm just going to be talking about how moving house is rubbish. But luckily, I've got my best mate helping me.
Who's that then?
That's you, mate. I've hired a van and Mark's helping me move. He mistakenly was like, yeah, I'm off on Friday. I was like, yeah, I'm moving house on Friday. Damn, there we go. Let's move house, buddy.
Why did I pay you for that, Hughes and Kettner? Surely my day rate for moving and storage is more than...
This discerning face doesn't quite get across on podcast, so I'm going to have to make this noise to disagree.
Okay, I'll just buy me a burger or something.
Oh, I can do that. I'll definitely do that.
Fine.
I'll buy your grubs.
Yeah, I'm in.
Double Hawaiian.
Did you say your email and...
Yeah.
I wasn't listening. Matt Knight, how can people get in touch?
You can email me, matt.knight@gak.co.uk, for all guitar-related things.
Stuff. And how
bass-related queries.
How about on the Twitter?
On the Twitter, you can get me, matt_knight, so that's Knight with SIE on the end, and tweet me about lots of pretty pictures of pretty pedals.
Nice.
Like, not ordinary pedals, just dressed up, you know, like just a bit of makeup, like a bow
nice.
On it.
Just pretty them up in general. Maybe put some sparkles on them or bake a pedal cake and send it to Matt.
A Boss pedal cake. That's what I want for Christmas.
The C-A-K-E-1.
Cheers.
Bye.
Bye. It means nothing to me.
Oh.